Spring Fest and Ego Days are here at Lowe's. Right now, get a free select Ego 56-volt battery with purchase of a select trimmer, blower, or mower kit. Plus, shop today for new and exclusive items you need for your lawn. So get ready for spring with the latest in innovation from Ego, the number one rated brand in cordless outdoor power. Only at Lowe's. We help. You save. Offer valid through 4-2. Selection varies by location while supplies last.
OTB's The Hurling Pod with James Skehill and Paul Murphy.
Welcome along. It is The Hurling Pod. We've just had our first hurling-only weekend, which meant that we had plenty of action across the TV this weekend as well, after we bemoaned it last week. So this afternoon, Limerick outscoring Tipperary in the second half, 15 points to 10 to register their first win in Division 1A. For Tipperary, what's going to stick in the craw, not just another Limerick comeback against them, the fact that they failed to score from play in the last half an hour at the Gaelic grounds. Anthony Burns scored two goals as Galway inflicted a second defeat on the reigning champions Clare, who sit second from bottom at the moment. Wexford are propping up the table following their defeat against Kilkenny on Saturday night. Davy Fitzgerald said he was left baffled by Antrim showing and their 15-point hammering by Offaly this afternoon in 1B. Conal O'Rin saw red for Dublin, but they survived his absence for the last quarter of the game in registering a 122-18-point victory against Westmeath to make it two wins from two. And Pádraig Fitzgerald with 12 points as a Waterford team described by their manager as wounded and angry after their defeat against Carlow came through to beat Laois in the end in 1B. So there you go. That is what has happened across the weekend. Paul Murphy, how are you?
How's it going, lads?
James Skell, 2 weeks with power now at this stage. Happy man.
Life's luxuries, huh? How we are.
We're very well indeed. We'll dig into the games in a second. I did want to just, again, we always have a few little bits of housekeeping before we start. And last week, I made a joke about Thiago Silva. Turns out, Thiago Silva is actually Thiago Silva, but not the footballer. But I did like that he gave us a follow-up on this. So Thiago sent us a message a couple of days ago, said, I have to reply to this in my defence. Firstly to Will, Thiago da Silva is a common surname in Brazil. I am not the footballer. Then he says he's been enjoying the podcast, loves listening every week. He said he becomes such a fan of hurling while in Limerick, he started playing Junior B. Turns out Thiago Silva's a pretty decent Junior B hurler as well. He says he took up the game, 30 years of age, full forward. He scored 1-1 from play in his first game. And he says he's looking forward to meeting us when we go on the road again.
Fair play. Come on, Thiago.
That is Thiago OG Silva on YouTube, who is back in touch.
Is that OG? Isn't it OG? Or...
I'd like to think that. I mean, I presume it's a joke about being the OG. I'm not 100%. I'm sure we can get another clarification from Thiago.
The OG at Junior B hurling.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what
you're
saying.
It's Junior B's OG.
Yeah, shot.
The other one, before we get into it, you've had correspondence as well, Paul Murphy.
I have, lads.
Up in Crowpatrick.
Yeah, Joe Loughlin got in contact with me. I don't believe Joe was one of the fellas I met from what he was saying to me. I'm just going to make sure and check the message now. But I think he was one of the stragglers on the hill at some stage. So they seem to be fairly spread out. But basically, he was saying... I can't remember if I said it exactly right, but we recorded that podcast twice. So I might have said it in the first one, might have said it in the second one. But I speculated that they were a stag party of some description, or just lads on the piss for the weekend. And he basically said there's 30 lads on a stag and no planning whatsoever. Just said we'd do it the past few hours after the breakfast. Crowpatrick, like. And they're all from North Clare, by the way. I said Galway. But I think Skehill, that's only another thing that they might have just thrown on Skehill's accent. I think that's what it was. That's not to say very
well. He's a check off, I am, yeah.
Well, they said Skehill, like they threw a little H. The whole Galway thing, throw in a H when you're in doubt.
I don't want to piss off people on both sides of the border here, but I would have thought that North Clare people and people from South Galway, their accent wouldn't be all that different.
Well, I'd have to check your test there now, Will, because if you're going to Galway itself... and go in the different areas. East Galway has got an accent, and even go even further. Like, I can tell you when someone's from Portumna. You know what I mean? I can tell you when someone's from Sarsfields. There's like, there's many accents within the county. So I would hedge my bets and say, yes, North Clare and on the border in Galway, different accents.
Fair enough.
Definitely, yeah, definitely.
I stand corrected.
And I have to throw in as well, sorry, the Mikey Hogan was who... I'm not going to say berated rant, but who let a roar at me when we were going up. He's since happily married. So congratulations to Mikey. We've had a few weddings. Was it Ben Keneally's wedding we had a few years ago?
We did. We sent him a message last year when he was getting married, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Just so I have you right on this one, okay?
Go on.
It was a stag do, and they decided to climb the mountain the morning after the stag.
Well, during the Stag. So this would have been a Saturday morning. So Friday, Saturday. So before the pub on Saturday.
So it was I thought it was like, okay, so it was part of the activity for the day.
Not a planned one.
It wasn't planned. No, it's not like the boys went paintballing. No,
if they went on Sunday morning after the Stag, I'd be very concerned with their mental health.
Oh, like, I mean, but that's, I think it kind of explains why there was lads dressed like Tommy Bowe on Ireland AM. Why they were, because they're only coming, they probably didn't even change from the night before, had the breakfast. And as Joe says here, no planning whatsoever. Just said we'd do it the past few hours after the breakfast. So here you are. Now, he said, he did sign off by saying the bottle of River Rock wasn't much good split between five of us. So there was obviously a thirst on a mighty end of it. But, I was very happy that not to say that you needed to be a rocket scientist to figure out that the boys were obviously just doing this ad hoc, but that they were on a Stag and they just said, feck it, up we go. Fair play to them, though.
Yeah. There you go. Made it up, made it back down. Hopefully they had a refill of the water bottle when they got back. So we'll kick into the action before anyone complains and says, hey, these boys are back talking shite about Crowpatrick again. So game of the weekend, I think, was probably the last one that we saw on TV, which was Limerick's win eventually today by 30 points to 123 against Tipperary. Dermot Burns obviously heard your call out, Skell, when you said he's not quite at the same level he's been at before. Sent over 7 points today. Yeah. Very, very impressive indeed. And it looks like, again, Limerick are finding a few players. Aidan O'Connor with 5 points during the game. We got to see, Skell, I guess, some of their young guns, because definitely by the end of the game, I think that Tipperary team was much closer to what we'll see in the summer than probably what we're going to see from Limerick. Limerick actually tried out quite a few lads here.
Well, I think you can divide up a panel, let's say, into nearly four sections. You can divide into season personnel, guys who were on the periphery on the team, off the team. Then you've got the panellists and then you've guys we didn't hear of at all. Some of the guys that played today, I've never heard of. Genuinely, I've never heard of Ethan Hurley. You know, maybe I'm to be correct, Jim, maybe you've heard of him, but I've never heard of him. Like, you know, obviously had English, O'Dolig, Aidan O'Connor, Patrick O'Donovan, you know, from a club perspective, can't remember playing with Limerick too often. You know, some great scores. Barry Murphy, cornerback, excellent. So I think if you're, obviously John Kiley going home today, he must be ecstatic for what his group put out today, because by my count, they're missing somewhere in the region of 10 starters. And then you look at their bench. There was not one single name that you could say was a regular substitute coming on. So their whole panel was like refreshed. And that's obviously because down to injuries and maybe what you were saying, Tom Morris has come back from Australia and whatnot. So for them, to produce performance for today, they're the first team, as far as I can see, that hit 30 scores this year. Not 30 points, 30 scores. So the shooting is on point. Burns is back on form again. They lose Kyle Hayes through the first half. Gets replaced by, as I said, Ethan Hurley. Didn't miss a beat number six. He scores. You know what I mean? There's Burns hit, what did you say, seven? Was it three from play, four frees?
Yeah.
Et cetera. Like, so he got his timing right back again. He looked really fresh, really good, kind of energised, and there was a bit about him. Keane Lynch in midfield, I thought was deadly. He was acting the way he was connecting the ball between the 265s was fantastic. Just making the hard stuff look so simple. And then to top it off, Tip went strong. So their team wasn't exactly too different from the last couple of rounds where they were really, really effective in the last two games. And Limerick just ground them out and finished really well in the last 7-8 minutes to get a well-deserved victory, but also a very impressive victory in the manner with the clientele they have. Like, and you know, we've talked, one particular area is the cornerback role, because Sean Finn and Mike Casey have had their issues with regards to staying fit. Obviously, when they're both fit, Dan Morrissey moves out and they get stronger. Barry Nash will be back, obviously. So Barry Murphy to fill in and play as well as he did must be kind of, I suppose, thank God, says John Kiley, because he's had injuries in the fullback line. So that's a huge plus for them. And then for the forwards, Aidan O'Connor, Patrick Donovan, like, great competition again, lads, especially when you're missing like the likes of Casey. And now we know Gareth Hegarty's got a broken hand for the foreseeable, which obviously is going to be a 6 or 8 week or so. Kiley's going home happy. Isn't he, Will? Either he's really good at staring contests or he hasn't listened to a word I just said.
Oh, Jesus. This is Murph, broadband.
What you make a Limerick and Tip? Take over from here.
I could do. He's back. He's there back. Go. I was going to do a Will impersonation there, but anyway, I don't think I have one in the bag.
Well, you can take it up. I came back in. I had a Skell moment there where, for whatever reason, the internet seemed to just disappear as Skell was finishing and then reappeared. And all I heard at the end was, well, I'll take over here. Murph, what did you think of the game between Tipperary and Limerick? So, but by all means, take it up in the widest possible sense like that if you want.
Okay, yeah, handy transition. Yeah, look, I suppose, Skell drilled into, I suppose, the clientele Limerick had on display today. And like, that's the kind of thing you have to look at in terms of a fairly pretty much Tipperary had everyone they have at the moment, you know, as close as you're going to have anyway for the moment, or that you're going to see even during the league. And just, you know, Limerick's ability to absorb that with a lot of fairly inexperienced players, like, you know, not a lot of the main people, and even seeing Kyle Hayes going off, Garrod Hegarty not being there from last week, and some of the regulars missing. Just Limerick's ability just to absorb, again, going back to that, absorbing what Tipperary were throwing at them, sustaining that, and then just kicking on, you know, because Tipperary were really good today. They started really well. You know, Willie Connors, Alan Tynan, these lads, they really got into the game very early on, and Tipper playing aggressive. I think Tip will be very happy with their performance today anyway. We touched on it last week that, you know, Tip didn't have to go and win today to take a lot from the game. And Sean Keneally's goal, excellent. He scored 1-3 as well. You know, it was an outstanding goal, bit of individual flair. I think, you know, just to touch on that as well, like, great goal, but also the fact that it kind of nearly shows that the likes of him is playing with a nice bit of freedom, and the Tipperary boys seem to be playing with a bit of freedom. But I'd say both teams are at different stages of their preparation for this year. Like, you know, Will, you sent on a small snippet of an interview with John Kiley after the game, where he said the pre-season has really suited us. A lot of the players are probably quite early on into their training. I'd say Tipperary are a little bit further on in theirs. And so for those two reasons, that's why I'm really impressed by this younger group of Limerick lads being able to take what a fairly experienced or a fairly to strength Tipperary team had to throw at them. But it was a good rattle for, you know, for 60 minutes of this game. It was a really good rattle. But, you know, like that now, Tipperary will look at the last, obviously, you know, the no scores from play in the second half, or last 30 minutes, was it 30 minutes?
Yeah.
Like, that's an indicator where they'll go, look, we're not really happy with that. But they were still in touch. You know, they were still getting a few frees. They were still knocking them over. They were still being really aggressive. So they'll take quite a bit from that. But, you know, once it got to the last 5-10 minutes and you really just saw Limerick, regardless who they had in the field, stretching it out, bringing it out to two scores and just really stretching the game out, that just shows you, like, you know, the kind of gulf between the two teams at the moment. And that gulf will probably only widen as we get to championship. Not taking anything away from Tipperary, but, you know, that's it's a fair testament to this Limerick panel that, look, Scale touch on it. Like, a lot of these players we don't really know too well, but they hurled really well today. So, look, positives on both sides. And look, it's early days. We won't be getting excited or ranting yet, but, like, it's early days for Limerick in terms of they're still building, they're still getting lads back, they're still trying to check a few lads out as well. So, yeah, look, good performance all around. But it was interesting to hear what Skehill thought of Shane Dowland, something we're probably going to visit every week. What do you think? What was his performance like today, out of interest?
His performance is solid. Like, and if you look at the goal that Keneally got again, Dowland got a touch on it.
Yeah.
You know, he got a touch on it, so he was close to it. Like, and I particularly like in the second half the save he made, and the one he just let rip on the double and got it out. Just get it out. Like, and his puckouts, they didn't really miss a beat, let's say. You know, did he perform better or worse than Galan the week previous? There was no difference, really. Like, Limerick kept on ticking. So there wasn't as if he was turning over ball, making mistakes. His handling was really good. Showed an open play. He was an option for the pass back from his full back line. Stopped what he could stop. The one that they scored, again, there's a low amount of keepers in the country that would ever save that one. So he was solid, like, really, really solid. And I'll be very honest, like, when I heard him call into the panel, I thought he was going to provide more of a support role. Truthfully, have an experienced head whilst the experienced head was recuperating from injury. And no, he's playing. And to go out against the perceived best team in the league to date and perform well, you know, like, there's no, you know, major difference between himself and Glenn at the moment. So it's that jersey's up for grabs.
Not to cut across you, Will, but yeah, I actually got a tweet from Kevin McKenna from North Tip is his location here on Twitter. And he asked, would you have saved the goal?
Would I have saved the goal? I hate that question, though. Like, I really do. Like,
no, in fairness, now what I will say is you text into the group when the goal happened, and you said that's actually a really hard one to save. Yeah. So not to put you on the spot, but you said it was a really hard one.
And it's, again, I don't want to go into the goalkeeper thing again here now. We're boring you to shit. Like,
but it's why we have you here for specialty stuff.
There's a couple of kind of shots that are really, really, really difficult to save. First and foremost is the ground one. So when someone strikes the ball off the ground, you've no idea, is it coming low at your ankles or is it going to whip up by you, up at your chest? You know, you just can't get a read on the trajectory of the ball and onto the direction. That's first. Second one that's really hard to save is the double. When some guy doubles in it, like, what happens with the doubles, they somehow curl a bit, if that makes sense, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they curl and you can't get a true line. His body shape gives away nothing. You don't know where it's going and you have to completely erect. So it's an extremely hard shot to save the doubles. And that's the same with the overhead pulls too much. Like, you just don't know where they're going to go. So If you ask me would I save that, I'm going to give you an honest answer and say, with the veracity of the shot and the execution, no. Will Owen Murphy save it? Possibly. Do you know what I mean? Absolutely possible. But I don't think I'm saving that, to be honest.
The other thing that I think is, now, not from being a goalkeeper, but like there's a few indicators when players are going through as well that might give away if they're going top corner, bottom corner, at least which side they're going for. Like usually, like that last time before they catch the ball, little glance over to the far side, are they high or are they low? So at least you probably know what side they're going to most of the time, I'd say. But the fact that, you know, Keneally could only look at the ball, his one focus was just connecting with the ball and going, right, we'll connect. There's, like you said, there's nothing actually given away there. Like, he could turn and try and roof it into the near, let's say, the near post and go up high. He could try and go low. He could go straight at the body. I actually understand what you're saying there, that it's very hard for Dowling to even... Huh?
So when a guy's running through, they're the cues he gives. Yeah. So he can give you a cue with his body shape, because subconsciously he's not thinking about body shape. He's thinking about goal, goal, goal.
Yeah.
And it's very rare to get players. There's only a handful that you'll see, the Cannings, the TJ, you know, the Lark Corbett, who could give you body shape, eyes, and cinch it the other way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
the way
they're
able to finish. Like, but they're the cues to give away. On a double or a ground ball, there's no cues whatsoever.
Mm.
It's just pure reactionary. And that's your time. Your time then gets cut down because you have to react exactly to whatever they do. And when you get a bullet like that, I'm afraid it's a green flag.
I would have also thought, like, when it came to the Keneally one today, that the vast, vast majority of forwards, lads, would have taken the easy option, which would have been take the ball into their hand. I know it kind of comes up at a nice angle from the hand pass with the way it's popped, and he obviously has a split second to make a decision, and he decides, right,
that's what Murph says. That's a great point you made about freedom. That's the brilliance of youth.
It's like,
I won't say it's a carefree environment, but you care a lot less. When I say care, you're not as conscious. You know what I mean? It's like you're out in the back garden, let rip. And that's exactly what it is.
It's the first thought that comes into your head, like, as in the ball popped up for him. He didn't have two thoughts. And that's the thing. Sometimes, particularly at the moment when the ball is heavy and the ball is landing around the goal mouth and things, you see some lads going to rise it. It's easy, say it from at home or from on the sideline when you're watching it. Why are you trying to rise it there? Because you're probably only going to run into a fella. Just pull on it. So, like, you know, even if Keneally hit that wide today, I'd say Liam Cahill is looking at it going, he had the right idea. Because if he caught it, Dan Morrissey was in the top of him. You're not going to get anything from it anyway. Yeah. He had a half second. And that's another thing to admire about it. He had a half second to decide. And never mind connecting with it, just to make that decision very quickly. He deserves great credit.
Did you ever attempt that kind of play in a club game around the left, where you found yourself up in the forwards? You just ghosted up, right? And said, screw it, I'm going for it. Not a point now, I'm talking about a goal. Did you ever rattle a goal in your life?
I scored a goal in Croke Park. I was minor.
Not the mini sevens now, okay? When you're
minor for Kilkenny. I was playing midfield and I scored a goal in Croke Park. We were beaten. Dublin Betis, Leinster final 2000.
Can we find this?
Sure, there's video somewhere of it, surely.
If you did, you're a better man than me because I don't think it was in, Murph? I'm going to say 2007.
I was going to say
my last year minor. I was midfield. Yeah.
What year were you born? 89.
89. Yeah.
Okay.
So, if it's there, but to answer your question, Skehill, did I ever do and like maybe when I was underage, I used to play centre forward and around. But it's a long time since I was up that neck of the woods to have, let alone get a ball up there, but to get a ball where I can show some flair. No, absolutely not. So, no. And I don't think you're going to find it.
I think we're in with a shout to find this, I think.
I don't know. I mean,
Leinster final? Nah, Dublin beat it.
Yeah, see, here's the funny part, right? I think we probably can get our hands on it eventually, but this is one of the things I love about YouTube, is that I can guess the Tipperary minor hurling county final from 2007, but I can't find the Leinster final.
That now is definitely handmade.
But you're just relying on, you know, you're relying on somebody who's good at keeping these videos to eventually digitize them and stick them up.
Yeah.
It's just so to pity the GA don't have all this material to be able to look back on it.
They are out there because there's lads there that if you type in a very specific game, you'll then find a kind of a creator on YouTube that's actually uploading lots of these fairly irrelevant games that, you know, only a handful or a few hundred people will actually watch in their lifetime, but they are somewhere. All these games are on DVD somewhere and they're on, you know, they need to be converted or whatever, but I'm not sure how many people. A few Dublin lads will probably want to watch the 2007 minor final because they won it, so that might be the only one.
If any of our listeners have it, by all means send it on to us and we'll work from there.
I'm sorry now to cut across you, Liz. You know how cheap we're playing Limerick in the first round of the championship in Munster?
Yeah.
Do you think, and I know I'm obviously a big advocate for the league is the league, like they're just, with Essence now, they're just, they're remarkable challenge games at times.
Yeah.
I reckon with the way Limerick feel, there's, you know, very little senior personnel today, and the manner in which they won the game, that's concern for Tipperary.
Well, yeah, as in like that, there's only like Limerick are going to get stronger.
Is that genuine concern that like Limerick are potentially, and again, I'm just throwing figures out the top of my head, operating at 60-70%, that by the time championship comes around, like, they'll improve exponentially because of the recruitment, whereas Tipperary, how much more can they improve? You know what I mean?
That is it. Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's just at the two stages that both teams are at. That's all it is. It's not a disrespect to either county, like, or mainly to Tipperary, but it is very much a case. And the one big factor that I think will also play into it is that at the moment, the fact that the ground is heavy, like if you look at any game over the weekend, a lot of it comes down to attrition. It comes down to lads running after balls, trying to rise them, balls not going to hand, lads miscontrolling them. Like there's good, so many games, a ball that was struck to hand didn't reach the player, bounced in front of him, and it bounced like a rugby ball.
Basics.
Yeah. And as the weather gets better, the pitches firm up, that ball, even if it doesn't go to hand, will just be a grand little bounce in front of a Limerick player, and their game will speed up an awful lot. And I think that's a huge factor. I was really impressed, and I'll get to it. I was really impressed with Offaly in terms of their ability to snap the ball around against Antrim. Like they had lots of space, but they used it really well. But lots of the games, if you look across the board, and the pitches are in tough condition at the moment, so it'll only benefit the better teams as it goes on. Once those pitches start to firm up, you're not getting dragged into the bit of the dogfights, and you're not getting dragged into rucks and tackles and all these things. So that's another factor for Limerick that I think, you know, their game multiplies again once we get into the better weather and the clocks go forward and all this, you know.
Yeah. Oh, look, I would agree that I think Limerick will definitely get stronger, and particularly with personnel that they're going to bring back in. And we might talk about some of John Kiley's comments in a moment about today and why some players weren't available. But the plus side, scale, if you look at Tipperary, right, and I appreciate that was definitely closer to their summer team. On the plus side for them, in the first few rounds of the league, they possibly are finding the structure that they're going to carry through to the summer, though. So again, Morris got 4 points in play today. It's very clear that McCarthy has now become their dead ball specialist. And in that really last good. Half hour where they were struggling from play, he was still popping over his frees and taking them very well. And like I think particularly that forward unit that we saw today, it's probably not going to be too far off what we're going to see during the summer. We talked about Connors playing really well in midfield last week as well. They're getting close enough, I think, to probably... where this is a team that's rebuilding somewhat, that actually they're getting closer to the other end of the rebuild rather than the start. I don't know if that's a positive for them.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. Like, and I think if you go back to 2 points you said at the start of your question, was one of Morris in the half forward line, a centre forward particularly, where he gets to roam a bit more and he's not exactly confined, if you like, to the full forward line. He's far more effective because we see when he has to go kind of man-to-man, one-to-one on the corner, it can be tricky for him to retain ball and be as effective as he'd like. Whereas today, it was again, he was impressive. Like he didn't shy away from tackles. You know, he's able to strike on both sides. He ran at Limerick's defence even when things weren't going great for them. And like Murph said, when the ground firms up, his pace and his athleticism will come to the fore more. You know, I'm also conscious then of guys are playing college games. Their load is a bit heavy. Like, so who knows what they've played over the last 10 days, 2 weeks. So you mightn't get a true reflection of what they're like. And then to go back to McCarthy, you said about his dead ball. Like, it's so important for a team, especially when you're playing, let's say today's example, right? You're playing against a team like Limerick. You're playing away with an energetic crowd. Limerick crowd are always energetic. The game's not going well for you. You get a free. You've got to take your point. If you miss that free, it's like a score and a point for Limerick in the opposite direction. You know, that's how much energy both the crowd and the opposition will get. So for McCarthy, for his age, I think he's 19, under 20 this year, I think. For him to nail those frees consistently, and I'm not talking about just today, over the last couple of games, nail them consistently in tough pitch conditions, tough breeze, you know, February and January conditions not exactly ideal for dead ball specialists. Superb. So he's the kind of fella that I would be saying Tipperary are going to carry. He's effective. He's going to get you in summer hurling, your 10 points every day, every single day where you won't be missing frees. And you might remember, obviously, in the podcast over the last couple of years, we have questioned the top level quality of some free takers. Like, are free takers really top level? And there was only what we were pointing towards, maybe one or two. That are consistently 9 out of 10 every single day. So if you have someone like McCarthy who keeps going the way he's going and he gets himself in that bracket, that's a major plus for Tipperary. You're right in what you said about where they are down the line. They're further away from the starting block. You know, they're heading towards the finish. Where the finish block is, I don't know. But where they were, where they started off, and the interjection of youth that Cattles has had to do in his last couple of years, he's brought them on now. And he'll mould the team, absolutely. And like they will get better too. My I suppose my original question to you, Murph, was their level of improvement, their ceiling, will that be able to, you know, exceed Limerick's? And I don't think it will, because the people that Limerick have to come back, you know, and like it's amazing. I hear conversations about, and I know I'm moving away from the game at the minute, but you hear conversations about, you know, the Galway team that faced Tip, happy young lads. The Clare team that faced Galway last night, happy young lads. Just look at Limerick today. They didn't miss a beat. They didn't miss a beat. They were put in the same group as let's say the Galways and Clares, and they didn't miss a beat. And they put in a super performance. And like you said, the war of attrition down the end. Look at the last couple of minutes near the sideline when there was a bit of, you know, a bit of jibing, a bit of jostling. Or Limerick were 4 or 5 points up and still loads of energy from the Limerick young guys to come in. And, you know, I think it was back up Keane Lynch in a bit of a minor schmozzle, we call it, right? Great to see from young guys. They're able to mix it, like feeding off the energy of the crowd and not letting their team miss a beat. So, positive all round.
Okay. Can I ask you from a defender's perspective on this, Murph? Ronan Marr, where would you want to hurl him if you were his manager right now?
I think, to be honest, centre back. Like, he's a really good full back, but I think can Tipperary need everything they can going forward? And like Ronan Marr does provide a big influence. Let's say he's well able to take scores. He could, you know, pop off 3 scores during a game if he got the space, if he got the time. Great man to field the ball, great man to tackle, very capable just going forward. You could play him at full back and shore it up there a small bit if you wanted, but I'd be kind of saying, do you know what, like let's just kind of play him at centre back as he was today. And Connolly at full back, memory serves right, he's going well, like, you know, isn't he?
He's very, very pacey. So he's probably more suited to today's type of fullback than Maher at the moment. Maher can hurl more at 6, I think.
That's it. Like, I mean, Maher has a great ability to read the game, drift onto it, you know, very physical, obviously, as we know, like both Parik and himself are really physical, but he can compete really high. But let's say if Tipperary create a bit of space around the middle there and he gets to open up the shoulders, like a Dermot Burns type character, like he can step forward, take a ball and pop it over the bar. And I think Tipperary may need that coming forward. So like if you say they didn't score a point for playing the last 30 minutes today, like Ronan Maher is capable of stemming that tide, never mind any of the forwards. Ronan Marr could maybe step up as a bit of leadership if they're in a Munster Championship match needing to keep the scoreboard going. So I would like to have, at any time in that 5 to 12 area, I'd be a big believer in having your best ball winners in that area. Do you know, in terms of lads who are capable of getting on the ball. Like, when was the last time Ronan Marr was playing in a match where he didn't really get on the ball? He's always involved. So I would just put him in there. If you had a luxury of a heap of players where you were like, we have 3 centre backs here, and you know what, I'd like to see him at the edge of the square. We're maybe not blessed with a number 3. Well, then, okay, Ronan Marr can drift back in there. But I just think at the moment, given that once Tipperary come to Championship, every game is going to be important and every score is going to be important. I think having Ronan Marr in that 6th position, it could be a really good influence on them for their campaign. So, yeah, I think there's way more hurling for him. As a fullback, I say that there's way more hurling for him at the halfback line, like, you know. Right.
Your expertise is called upon for this. I was just thinking as well, when it comes to the way that Limerick finished the game as well, particularly defensively. So, in all likelihood, Dan Morrissey and Dermot Burns are probably the only 2 players that are going to be starters come the summer.
Guaranteed he's going to start.
You think he'll start? Have you been that impressed by him so far?
Guaranteed, no 2 ways about it, yeah. I think he's going to take Sean Finn's place.
Wow.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Jeez, that's a big statement.
It is a big statement. So, like, they're both fit.
So what happens to a team, right? What happens? So, like, the biggest, so players, and like this, again, this might be perceived bad from the public, right? They might say, what are you on about Sean Finn? Sean Finn has been imperious all through his career. He's been unreal. But the last couple of years, he's had injury troubles, right?
So from an injury point of view, kind of more so, is it?
Yeah, not from quality perspective. It's just, will he be on the pitch? That's the question, will he be on the pitch? And when things get faster, Murph, as we've alluded to, and the hamstrings start turning again, look, is he going to be on the pitch? So the last, like recently, the last 2 years, has he been on the pitch much? No, he has not. And he struggled, you know what I mean? So I think that when Barry Mash comes back, you know, he's like an automatic. Of course, he's an automatic into the 4 position. I do think Barry Murphy, even though he's wearing 4 on his back at the moment,
we've won there.
Yeah,
I think Sean Finn will be there. I think I know where you're coming from with the injuries, but I think maybe the injuries have served that Sean Finn is going, not taking a chance on anything, and basically having the body right to be on the field. So I think if he's fit, I think Sean Finn goes out there. But do you know what? It's an interesting one.
My point is, right, I'm hedging a bit. So if Finn was fit and Murphy is fit, it's Finn all day.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is I would have a concern over Finn's body, not over his quality. Never quality. He's brilliant, right? I'm just saying, can the body hack up to it? That's all at the minute.
Okay.
When things get quicker.
I didn't even clarify that well. My first thought when you said that was I thought that you were going to say that Murphy on form would be better than
Which
Finn.
Which can happen when I say things like that initially.
When you said it, I was like, Jesus, that was out of...
No, it can happen. I know there's been bold statements before on this podcast. I do agree with that. But just to clarify before I get hate mail from Limerick or from F and wherever. Bruff, is he Bruff? Sean Finn is Bruff?
Yeah, Bruff, yeah.
Just before I get any hate mail from Bruff, I'm just saying it's the... If the body's right, he's there. I'm just questioning whether the body's right.
That's people of Bruff will be out in the streets tonight with their pitchforks.
Easy.
Yeah. I guess my point was more going to be Hayes obviously goes off injured after 24 minutes and he was holding down position at six. I still think the Hayes will be wing back by the time the championship comes round, and if Hannon is back in and fit, he'll still be playing at six.
So I have to interrupt you because you're a man with the ear to the ground, right?
Right.
Which is my favourite show, by the way. What is the story with Hannon?
I don't know, to be honest. I don't know. I do work with his wife, and I feel I probably should ask her at some point when she's on a podcast tour at the moment, I believe. So I think when she comes back for a podcast tour, I will say, what's the crack? And is Declan going to be playing soon? And we'll find out. I don't know. Look, all indications have been, from just what I've read, without talking to anyone about Hannon specifically, was that he was going to work his way into the year. And that it was no question that Declan Hannon was retiring. Like, they were really quick to point that out, you know, when the captaincy changed. It was like, Declan Hannon is still going to have a key role in this panel. So I don't know whether he's carrying a knock or what the crack is, but obviously there's a lot of players on that team who are being eased back into it, though.
Yeah. So there's players on like every intercounty panel. I suppose it's just the fact that the captaincy turned over, people are maybe asking questions. But I like, look at any intercounty team at the moment, I think nearly all of them have lads. Like, you look at Kilkenny Wexford the other day, they were looking at Owen Murphy and TJ up in the stand and Lee Chin up in the stand. You look at Tipperary, they have Jason Ford up in the stand. You know, nearly every game you enter, I think it's just because it's Limerick and the captaincy changed over. But like Hannon is 32. I think he's perfectly being eased back into it. He's the old, would I be right in saying he's the oldest player now that's there since Graham Mulcahy stepped aside?
Other than Dowling, obviously, yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, is Dowling, I think Dowling's younger than him even.
No,
you're right. Yeah, sorry, you're right. But so I just think he's being eased back into it. But I was just saying, it'd be good now for anyone who doesn't know, like Louise Cancelan does How to Gale, isn't that her podcast? Mm-hmm. So you ask her for the scoop and she gives it back to Os Gaeilge and you don't know what to do with it then. I just think that'd be the ultimate Trump moment for her to do that. Just
trying to work out what is hamstring injury, Os Gaeilge.
Os Gaeilge.
No, I believe they're stateside and in Canada at the moment with that. So she will be back after the break, and I'll certainly ask the question and allow her to say, I'm not telling you whether my husband is able to play. So there were some other clarifications that came from John Kiley afterwards. So we're recording early enough on Sunday to bring you this podcast early. So at least Skell and I can go and watch the Super Bowl. I think Paul's Super Bowl days are over in terms of watching them. But
you sound like I'm injured. My Super Bowl days are over.
Well, he explained before he came on, back when Army duty sometimes went overnight on the Sunday Super Bowl. You would be known to watch it from time to time, Paul. Would that be fair?
Well, I used to watch the NFL before, and I would much rather watch an NFL game
regular season
because the thing that just grits me, like I look at the Super Bowl final and you go on tonight and it's like, as soon as the ball goes out, it's ads, it's Beyonce, it's Shakira, it's, you know, it's just madness. So like you stay awake from 11 till 9 till 4 in the morning, you'll get 14 minutes of play and you'll be wrecked till about Wednesday. So I'm going, no, I'll watch Red Zone on Sunday evening during the regular time. I just can't get on board with it. And then, as you said, Will, before we came on, we'll have the halftime show. I don't even know who's on tonight, but someone...
Kendrick Lamar,
is it? He was only on a few years ago. But usually, like, they dust off someone, like someone they haven't seen in years, they dust them off, throw them out, do half an hour of a show, and you just wake up, then you're like...
Dust them off
like Tom Petty or someone was a few years ago, and they're just like, oh, we'll bring back someone for a big medley. So that's, I'm very cynical towards the Super Bowl. And plus,
I understand that. Like, this, I was saying to you literally before we came on, there's a couple of years recently where I have fallen asleep after the halftime show. I'm full of energy until that point. And I watched a mate of mine a couple of years ago, and like, we were very lucky not to actually burn the house down because we had pizzas and whatever else on at halftime. And I'm pretty sure both of us fell asleep during the halftime show and woke up at some point in the second half. It's just, it's a killer because that break becomes, and I don't know how the teams actually put up with it, becomes over half an hour of a break, maybe 40 minutes. And you're just there going, ah, lads.
It that was one thing I always thought about. I know we're getting, now we're on to a different tangent here, but I always thought about that. Like when you go in, like, what do inter-county teams get now? It's about 10 or 15 minutes, but it actually feels long when you're in there and you kind of just want to get back out. Because I always used to feel that I would never really have sat down in the dressing room because I felt like my hamstrings would start tightening up. So I generally just try and stand and stay warm. But like 40 minutes. Now, granted, the NFL players are used to, you know, offense on, defense on, staying warm, coming off, you know, and staying, doing all that. But like 40 minutes in an All-Ireland final. Like, let's say if someone said that, right, Limerick and Clare, off you go, you'll be back on in 40 minutes. Oh, I'd pull my hair out. Do you know, I can't get
like,
my head around
it. It could be an hour from the point that you've actually had a play. Like, say if the other team had the ball just before you go in at halftime, you come back out and say you're facing the kickoff and they might have the ball for a little while as well. It's a lot. It's a long time to try and punch in. And I don't know. Look, I suppose that's what you're trying to put up with.
As we said a few years ago, I had one game where they had a Falcon in the stadium and it nearly threw me off the game. So having a heap of fighter jets and fireworks going over while Chris Stapleton sings the national anthem, I don't know what. I wouldn't be able to play the game, I don't think.
Skell, did you say you're not watching? Is that purely because you can't stomach either the Eagles or the Chiefs winning?
Look, the Eagles bet the Pats in Super Bowl a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. That doesn't hurt me too much. It's just Mahomes and Taylor Swift. I just can't hack them anymore.
Yeah, that's
fair enough. Shoved down your throat like at every given chance. And then the refs, you can't touch Mahomes. Cannot touch him. Can't touch him, but he's flopping on the place like a fucking sheet in the wind, right? And I just can't. Like, I just can't. Can't deal with it. Little known rule in NFL, right? The minute the quarterback leaves the pocket, right, he's a runner, which means you can smash him. Smash him, right? If he's in the pocket, you can't smash him. You got to check him down. Like, you have to go down and say knees, hips first, right? But when he leaves the pocket, you can bury him, right? And they won't let you touch him. So the minute you touch him, he flops over and it's like, you know, unnecessary roughness, 15-yard penalty. It's like, fuck's sake, here we go again. You know what I mean? You mark my words, right? I'm going to say it here now. Next week, we'll be sitting here, okay? Wait and see. There'll be a bullshit call with 2 minutes to go and the Chiefs win by a field goal because they get a 15-yard penalty or there'll be a pass interference. You know what I mean? Yeah, wait and see. Every fucking time. Yeah. I'm not watching the game site. No.
Unnecessary roughness from Skell. First down to the Chiefs, purely based on those comments. So what John Kiley said, as we got slightly off track, when it comes to Garrod Hegarty, he broke a bone in his hand after he was stood on the first half of the draw against Cork. I saw him walking off. I didn't actually see the stamp when I was watching the game, but Kiley said he got a lot of stitches. He's got a broken bone in there. It was nasty enough. He got stood on. That's it. These things happen. He's well on the road to recovery. We just have to make sure he's 100% before we put him back in. He talked about Kyle Hayes as well. He said it's only a small issue, nothing serious. He said we've been lucky so far. Anything that we've had hasn't been too serious. They're only maybe 2 or 3 week jobs. Feeling that this team is a new energy and a light load coming into the year. And he said the removal of preseason competitions has actually been a help for Limerick this time round. The one that we pick up on, Murph, is comments about Seamus Flanagan. So Seamus Flanagan wasn't involved today. And the Central Competitions Committee didn't bring sanctions against him last week. So Flanagan was free to play. However, Limerick chose not to play him. And Kiley said that his actions were poor in the game against Cork. He said, quote, Seamus wasn't togged out. It was an internal matter. We took it on ourselves to deal with it. It's now finished and done. It's dusted. He missed today's game. We move on. He regrets what happened. That was the poke of his hurl into the testicular area of Niall O'Leary. He said, we move on. It was one of those moments. It was poor from him, but we move on. So I don't know. Were Limerick right to drop him for the game when obviously they didn't have to do that?
No, they didn't have to do it, but I think it's good management out of Kiley. Not because... Sure. Yeah, like, it's just... It's a reminder to Flanagan that, like, you know... he's a vital cog when he's on the field. And I genuinely believe when Kylie says it, like, we know Seamus Flanagan. Like, I believe he was disappointed afterwards because he reacted. But I think Kylie wants to maybe just drill home that, okay, if you're to do it and you've done it now, don't do it again when it comes to a Munster Championship, because you will be missing. Like, you can guarantee there'll be maybe an extra camera there that'll pick it up, or it'll just be picked up and you're gone then. And that's an important time. So, like, regardless whether it's Flanagan or whether it's Gillan or whether it's Will O'Donoghue, you know, Kylie doesn't want any of his players come to an important match, a Munster final, an All-Ireland semi-final, and that to be a deciding factor. So it's just a bit of housekeeping. I think fair play out of you know, John Kylie, just to have that discussion with Flanagan and say, look, you're better than that. And for Flanagan to go, fair enough. Flanagan, I'm sure, would have wanted to play today. And just being left aside for today would be enough to drill it into your own head to go, okay, yeah, you know what, I want to be on the field every time we go out here. I want to play. I don't want to be letting the team down like that. So fair enough. You know, they looked after it. Off you go. And look, it's the last we need to see or talk about it. Like, you know, it's been done now.
What do you reckon, Scott?
I agree. I just think it sends it's not even an indirect message. It's kind of a direct message to the rest of the panelists. You know, because every team that's successful, you know, the smallest incident, I'm not saying the incident was small, but the smallest incident can be perceived as huge in the public eye, you know? So, and sometimes when you're successful as well, those incidents come to the public more than they'd like, you know, because obviously it gets attached to your success. And people want to strip you down. That's just reality of it. So when you have an incident like this now with Seamus Flanagan, who I know is like Murph, I didn't ask him, but I know that he'd probably be disappointed to have been, you know, associated with that. I don't think he'd disagree too much. Like, that's not to say no, he didn't get treatment himself, because we didn't see that either, but I'm pretty sure
that's the other thing. Look, you can guarantee that Flanagan was getting it as well. He was getting it.
I'm pretty sure it did,
and that's the other thing we haven't spoke about, like, you know,
there was give and take, and I'm sure he got it as well. So but I think, like, even from Kylie's perspective, from a management perspective, that then stops, I think, the public, the media, from asking further questions about the incident. I think it does, because he took action. Seamus was probably, I suppose, in air quotes, reprimanded for the action, and now it's parked. Move on to play again in 2 weeks. So I agree with the decision, although Seamus might feel it's a bit harsh on him because the treatment he may have got or may not have got. But ultimately, that incident now is well and truly buried, as far as I can see.
Yeah, you can't consider it harsh, though, can he? Like, I mean, as much as you might be getting treatment, you can't just push a hurl into someone's balls.
You see, we didn't see... Okay, look, that element, I'm fully with you, okay? But, like... That reaction, right? This is me thinking out loud. That reaction is not drawn from someone like Seamus Flanagan unless he's provoked to some degree. Like, either something happened off the ball, something was said that was bad. I don't know what it was. I'm not going to categorize it. But that doesn't happen unless there was something to make him retaliate. Do you know that's my mind space when I'm talking about this kind of incident. That just doesn't happen for the crack. We've heard long enough. You don't just go up and hit someone just out of, you know, out of the blue. You have to be drawn somewhere. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I don't know what happened. I'm sure when we see him in face-to-face, it's the first question I ask him. But let's just say we won't find out publicly anyway.
The only thing I'd say, like, I mean, I know you're saying that, you know, not to say he might be disappointed or whatever. Like, from speaking to him from the night, let's say, in Dublin, or even I did a bit with the BBC with him, like, without doubt, one of the most... emotionally intelligent fellas I've ever met in terms of how he speaks. And like we did the show with him and people were blown away really by how well he spoke and how his point of view on games, his intelligence is off the charts. So I don't think he's disappointed. I think he may be disappointed that he did that himself. But I wouldn't say he's going to John Kylie, you know, why are you suspending me here? Like, I think he completely understands John Kylie's mindset as to why he's doing it, his position on it, exactly, Scale. And it just harps back to any discussion I've had with him. You know, he's had such a grasp of what Limerick have done, where they're going, what they're about. And I'm like, no, I think he completely understands it. And like I said, I just think he is buried and that's it. He knows now, he's trained all week, he'll train next week, he just missed the game today and off he goes. He plays the next match if he's selected or whatever.
Yeah, I think as well, Kylie will be acutely aware of the scrutiny that's been on Limerick in recent times. And like a lot was read into the fact that Kyle Hayes had played at Croke Park against Dublin around the time of his trial. And people wondered whether John Kylie had made the right decision and should John Kylie have maybe spoken about it more and all of that. It's like Limerick have been, I think, very much in the lens of public opinion for quite a while. And even when Kyle Hayes won his All-Star, people were then talking about it again. And as you say, I guess when they've made their decision that they're going to stand down Flanagan for this game, Flanagan has shown contrition for what happened. the kind of the everything just rocks on the far side of the break after this.
In fairness, though, hasn't Kylie over his tenure hasn't he had to deal with some amount of issues or incidents? In fairness to him, which has been tough, stuff that has nothing got to do with the hurling pitch. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or preparation for a team like so.
I'd argue though it hasn't ever affected them as a team though.
I think it has.
Maybe that's credit to Kylie in the way that he's handled it as well.
But I think it has. We just haven't seen it. We haven't seen the work in the background to fix it.
Publicly, Scahill, it hasn't.
I don't think it has ever affected them publicly. I think they've shown a great, kind of force of armor together. But I would not, belittle the kind of efforts that the likes of Caelan Curran has done to limit the impact it's had on the team, because we never see it. But that kind of stuff has to have seeped into the team some degree, because you can understand players and even last year, for example, the player in question himself, you know, must have been tough, but for the rest of the players to be constantly asked about it or in their own parishes or in their own professional lives, you know, must be tough. So for Limerick to come out and show kind of show of strength together and unity and keep their performance high on the pitch has been exceptional, I think. Because that would down many a good team.
Yeah, you know? I wouldn't disagree with that. Right, moving off from the game of the weekend, which was that win for Limerick against Tipperary, we go back to last night, to the other games in Division 1A. And before we go into the game itself, Skell, it's both very sad news. With Michael Coleman passing away on Friday, and clearly it affected the panel. I was listening to Conor Whelan speaking after the game. I thought he spoke really well, felt it kind of bonded them together and that they wanted to produce a performance. And they had the tribute with the jersey out in the pitch beforehand to mark a player who was an All-Ireland winner with them and an All-Star as well. So I suppose, first of all, look, very sad news. Part of those beloved Galway teams at the end of the 80s.
Yeah, sure. Like he's, in fairness, so if you know Michael Coleman, God rest him, like he was a gentleman at the back of it as well. So everyone would know him to the forefront here from his hurling career. As tough as you'd get on the hurling pitch. You know, like no helmet. I often say put the head where you wouldn't put the hurl. I actually played against him myself when I first came on the scene for the club. He frightened the life out of me because he positioned himself full forward, of course. So that took my sights for a good while. Lovely person. You know, real kind of a mild mannered, down to earth, soft kind of spoken, never was too loud, too brash, etc. And we kind of one of those players that was in, you know, the background, never came in the media side of things over the course of his career, even after it, you know. So we didn't hear an awful lot about him. And like the details of the accident, I haven't exactly got the full extent of them, but you know, obviously tragic. So a big loss to the hurling community.
Yeah. No, big time, big time. Murph, the game itself, I watched it this morning when I got up because I was at other things last night, so I had it taped. And I was impressed by how Galway played, because we were bemoaning how poorly they had played against Tipperary in the first round. Yeah. Got that good win against Kilkenny and showed a little bit of grit last week. And we'll ask Gail about it in a second, but to start with you, Murph, I very impressed by Anthony Burns, by the way he took his chances. Finished with 2-3 from play. I think 2-2, that was in the first half of the game. This guy looks like a right finisher. I know he was good for Loughrea this year as well.
Yeah, he does. He was extremely lively. And if you look at our Galway in the last 15 minutes, 2-7 to 2 points they outscored Clare. And two of the goals were from Burns. I'm not sure points-wise what he got during that time. But yeah, he was electric. As soon as he got the ball, it's just his aggression, thinking, right, I'm going to have a go at goal here. And I thought he complimented Conor Whelan, for example, really well, because Conor Whelan's a great man, not only to create stuff, and we saw him creating stuff last night for himself, but also just to bring other lads into the game. So like when, I can't remember if it was the first or second goal he got, ball breaks through, Whelan's onto it. Burns' run off the shoulder was really good because it left it open for Whelan if Whelan wanted to carry it on and go through, or was it a case that Burns was going to, you know, take the pop pass. But really impressed by him, looked really sharp. And when you compare that last week with Loughlin as well, like, you know, just in terms of they've had a few goal scorers coming through. I think, you know, Micheál Donoghue would be really happy with that type of performance as well. And you look as well, like, you know, it was a good player full back line. You know, he really put up the challenge against him and made a lot out of balls as well that he had to fight kind of 50-50 for as well. Like, it wasn't just a case that they were all laid on for him, but, you know, great performance out of him. Was it 2-3 he finished with, Will? You know, mighty performance from play. Probably, you'd probably have to say player of the weekend. I'm trying to think of anyone else. Just mighty, mighty performance from, I know Motsi down in Wexford got two goals as well, but the 2-3 from play is just outstanding. So, like, again, we go back to the first game at Galway. nothing to take from it. Really disappointing game last week against Kilkenny. Different performance altogether. Gavin Lee is probably the standout player from that game, was absolutely mighty. And then this week, Burns steps it up. So like with each game, they're taking something really important from it. But mighty performance. And that particularly last 15 minutes for Galway, you know, I think the Galway crowd... 2 weeks ago, you know, they would have been saying there wasn't a performance like this in Galway. But to have the All-Ireland champions come to Galway and to really turn it on there, that was where a lot of the heavy lifting was done for them. And Burns was such a forefront. So, yeah, mighty performance.
What do you reckon, Skell? Can he take maybe some of the scoring pressure off in that forward line now?
I suppose you have to, a bit like when we talked about Sonny Kelly for Tipperary, being young and being free to it, like... And actually, Burns is playing in club hurling in Galway for the last, God, I'm going to say 5-6 years minimum. And
like, what age is he now?
I'm going to hazard a guess now, Murphy. You put me on the spot. I'm going to hazard a guess and say 23-24.
Okay.
Yeah. So we play Loughrea a lot. You know what I mean? And like we played him this year in the final, and he was player of the championship for all of Galway this year for sure. Got man of the match in the final as well.
Yeah,
very very tough to handle.
His form is good. Yeah,
his form is good, but this has been his best year by far. He seems to have strengthened out really well physically. You know, he's looks like a lad that has put on, let's say, 5 or 6 kilos over the last two seasons.
Yeah,
so he's very very fast. He's two sided, and as we'd say up here, he's a bit bold. Do you know what I mean? He's well able to flip and hack it, and that's the truth. I'd say so. He wouldn't be, as far as I'm concerned, he would have felt well at home there yesterday.
Yeah.
Not like that it was his debut or that this was new to him and he was kind of embracing the whole... He was saying, yeah, I belong here. And from knowing the jungle edge playing against him, he'd look at Conor Whelan and go, yeah, I'm just as good as him.
Yeah.
That's the mindset he'd have. So he's a great, brilliant, I suppose, asset to have. And he's one of the, by my count, he's one of the A players that Galway have introduced over the last three games, which is very important. Mm. You know, of the A players who went in, you could say the eight guys have equipped themselves pretty well, pretty okay. Mm. You know, so like you're right, Murphy got 2-3. He was fouled twice for two more points and he had two whites. You know what I mean? And he's five tackles. So like he's well able to, even if the ball is not retained by him initially, he's able to stop it and turn it over himself. You know what I mean? So he's a fair operator. And I think Galway are going to be very happy. Like we had 8 regulars starting the game yesterday. 7 guys who were, again, you could say on the periphery. And then a couple of new guys. Like, so it's positive. And I think it's a continuation of the positivity that was shown the week previous. Because like we saw associated with Galway, and I'd be a critic myself, you can get a super performance this week and the next week you're just not quite sure. You know what I mean? So when we saw against Tipperary, it was the attitude. I didn't give a shit about the result, as we knew. You know, didn't really care. It was just the attitude and the body language. That was fixed against Kilkenny. Now can we make it 2 in a row? And they head into a break now, having done really 2 really good performances on the back, back-to-back. So I think Micheál will be happy. His management team will be happy. The players themselves, I think, will be happy too, because they have that Tipperary game is well and truly buried now, I think.
Yeah.
It's buried because they played two really good counties over the last fortnight and played really well. And in the same breath, I think when looking at Brian Lohan and even his body language on sideline yesterday, he was all energy too. Like they wanted to put a performance there, so he'd be probably disappointed to a degree. And of course, people will point to the fact that Clare are missing a heap of regulars, probably missing 9 or 10, I'd guess. I didn't count, to be fair. Yeah, I know they introduced Tony Kelly, but probably that. But I'd probably say he was a bit disappointed with his defence in the first half, particularly when you've got lads who've played league time, you know, in Darrell Owen, I say, and Galvin and Hayes, etc. Probably a bit disappointed with how easy the scores were coughed up in the first half, you know. Mm. And even with the amount of shots that Galway had in the second half, I think they had like 9 wides, 10 wides in the second half.
They had 12 wides in the second half.
12, excuse me. So they had the 40 shots to 23 over the whole course of the game.
It was close enough to it. I definitely wrote it down earlier on. It was something like that, yes. They were shooting fairly freely. I mean, you can argue that's them making chances is the other way of looking at it.
Of course. Now, of course, I can argue that maybe the execution for Clare up top wasn't great. But first and foremost, you want them to defend really vigorously and kind of keep making a battle as best you can and let their quality take care of themselves from there. But that's not concerning at all. I'm not going to sit here and say it's concerning. It's not one bit. But I don't want a situation to develop whereby people say, ah, Clare just came to fulfil the fixture. That's not the case. You know what I mean? This is the Ireland champions, proud. The team might still rank number one, to be fair. I don't know how people don't rank them number one. They're on merit. And of course, they wanted to come up and put up a really good game. It just didn't happen. They just dissipated over the last 20 minutes, in essence. So I think Galway head into the break in really good health. And then Clare will be thankful that in a couple of weeks they have the visit of Wexford, I believe. Do you know?
Yeah.
They need to get them 2 points to get into out of the relegation area, because that's 2 points they have to get.
They obviously win one of the other games as well.
Well, here I sit now, Will, and you know, Galway are third, is it, with 4 points. They go into the bye week, or they're in a break, obviously. They could come out of the next round and be in fourth. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's just the gas reality of the league at the moment. Have 4 points and they could drop down a place that I haven't played. You know, so the league is I won't say topsy-turvy. I just think I like that it's really competitive, more competitive than we've seen in years previous.
Yeah.
And all the while, teams are introducing new players, which is great for us to see. Guys, again, I point back to Ethan Hurley today for Limerick centre-back. Never heard of him. So great to see young people coming on, new lights coming in, and adding to it without the quality of the games going down.
Yeah. I mean, again, I suppose the thing for Clare, and look, we can talk about where they are now at the moment, but like, if you consider they're missing their full-back, their centre-back, probably the two starting midfielders, they have a totally different half-forward line, I would think, when obviously Tony Kelly came off the bench, but Dave Fitzgerald's back, you're missing the Hurler of the Year, who would be your inside forward. Aidan McCarthy, probably the only one of the inside forward line that would be a fairly nailed-on starter.
Well, I have a question for you, Will. Yeah, I have a question for you. So obviously, like, when you go through last year and the year previous, when they went through the league, they found one or two. Each season, you could say. Who have they found at the moment, would you say? Hard to point to it now.
I'm not sure.
Hard to point to it. You know what I mean?
That's fair.
Like, when you consider, let's say, you know, they got Lean, like they got, like, who else did they get over the course of the leagues the last couple of years? I thought Sean Ring was going to be an option last year. Wasn't great last night. You know what I mean? You could say maybe King Gavin, I'm not too sure. Beyond that, lads, it's like Daryl Owen was okay in the league last year.
Yeah,
you know, was not great yesterday. I know he went off injured, of course, obviously.
Yeah,
but like, that's where I'm coming from. See, I'm looking at Galway and saying the performances aren't, if they're not great, fair enough. But is there guys who are adding to things? Like, is Gavin Lee at six seems like a good final? John Fleming is good. McLaughlin's good. Mm. Like, we know Anthony Burns is good. So there's players there that are going in there. Shane Morgan, Tierney Killeen. You can say now we can add these people into it. With Limerick, we've already discussed Donovan, O'Connor, Murphy, you know what I mean, Hurley, etc. That's who can add to the mix. So that's the only, I won't say concern, but maybe a question mark that will be raised by yesterday's performance, you know? Yeah,
The Clare listeners will be in contact, I have no doubt.
Of course.
Probably players they've spotted so far.
This is me not bashing, Jesus. Before you go at me now, this is me not bashing Clare. I'm only asking a question. And I'm interested to hear your opinion, right? Without flipping ramming down my throat about something with Galway.
Again, let them answer the question. We're very easily contactable, and you can stick it in the public comments or in the chat in the YouTube or wherever you want, and we'll no doubt scan through and see it. And I wanted to make this point, right? Because sometimes we joke about the feedback that we get, and we're going to joke back to them, whatever else. We actually do welcome people meshing us and giving us comments and a different set of eyes who've possibly watched all the games so far this year. Yep. And maybe you get someone from Clare who can say, I know someone who's been really good in the club championship. You've only got to see him there in a fractured team at the moment. Think he can go really well. Let us know. Like, has anyone jumped out for you in the two Clare games that you've watched, Murph? Because you watched them against Kilkenny a couple of weeks ago as well.
No, not really. Like, I mean, in terms of new names, nobody has jumped out. And like, the one thing for players now at the moment is that there's some games can be really tough because, like you said, Will, exactly it. You could be playing in a kind of fractured team in that you have some regular starters and a lot of new lads. It can be kind of hard to get any sort of flow to your game. But the one thing that's consistent across all games at the moment is that if you look at the one thread, and this might seem like a very broad stroke, but one thread that the teams that are going well at the moment is that they're just being dogged and they're working really hard. It quite simply comes back to that. Galway in the first game, they didn't even work at all, you know, against Tipperary, and Tipperary were really aggressive. You look at Kilkenny and Wexford. Kilkenny in the first half were working really hard, and the second half took the foot off gas. Wexford worked really hard in the second half, and they only scored the first point for play after 45 minutes.
Yeah.
My point being is that hard work counts for an enormous amount at this time of the year compared to later in the year. Like, later in the year, you could have a team that's just moving really well, the ball's flying around the place, they can just avoid you, they can negate you. But at the moment, because there's rucks, there's tackles, there's hooks, there's no such thing as a ball that's really out of play.
I would also say to you, hard work, right? It'll look like a team. Hard work and structure. Simple structure. When those two are pieced together, you're always going to be in the fight. You know what I mean? So when you miss the structure or set up wrong, you can be working as hard as you can, but you're getting nowhere.
But I'm just talking from an individual, you know, like an individual. You know, we were talking about, has any players stood out? Like, now is the time for any players that if they want to be in with the mix come championship or round robin, it's now. So like, even if your team is a little bit fractured, it's not going well, you can still be that fella being dogged, running around the field, getting a hook, getting a block. And let's say for Brian Owen, for example, he might go, okay, Galway were much the better team the other day, but player X, I could see him working really hard. He was tackling, he was chasing. Okay, he maybe didn't do the right pass, but he's trying his best. That, at this time of the year, is huge. It's important because it's an indicator that, you know, a fella isn't going to just go out and drop the head because the team isn't hurling well. A player's going, well, I can worry about my little patch and I can go out there and I can work really hard and it counts for something, because it really does count for something. So to bring it back, like Skehill and Willick, what you're saying just about, you know, has anyone stood out? No, nobody has for Clare at the moment. And I would say that, you know, for any young Clare player hoping, like when the Tony Kellys come back and you know, McInerney and Conlon, and like, you want your name in the hat, and now is the time to be going at that. And I'd be saying, so what if you go out and you're beaten by Galway? You can still go out and perform really well in your own position and give Brian Lowen a bit of food for thought. So I, you know, for a lot of players there, and it goes for all teams across the board, your team doesn't have to go well for you to go well and send a message to the management. And it's the time of the year with the pre-season gone now, pre-season games gone. Now is the time, if you get thrown in, just go out and just be a lunatic. If you get taken off after 50 minutes, yeah, as in for the legs being run into the ground, so be it. But now is the time to put your name out there, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll ask both of you this before we chat about the other game that took place last night. Is there a possibility, Skell, let you first shout in this, that Clare could go down here, because they still have to play Limerick, they still have to play Cork, they definitely need to win that Wexford game. They've given themselves a bit of work to do to make sure they stay up now.
The first team above them is Limerick on 3 points, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So like, that's a game when they play Limerick, they're going to have to turn them over. Simple as that. You know, so the possibility, of course it's possible. Granted, they're Ireland champions in last year's championship. You know, and the last year's league champions, but in this league so far, they're on 0 points minus nine. They're playing a team now where they have to get 2 points against Wexford. If they don't get 2 points against Wexford, and I will even say if they get 1 point against Wexford, they're in serious trouble. They have to get two. Mm-hmm. If they get zero, they're relegated. Fact. Here's what I mean, because the gap is too much. If they get two, they'll have to topple. They have to win out. I think they have to win out. It doesn't matter. They'll have to win out.
Well, they will.
Trouble games, I mean, yeah. They have to win out. They have to win the last three in the story. So is it possible? Yeah. How much chance do I give it? I give it a solid 75% of the minute. Right now,
that they'll go down.
Yeah, two up, two down, right?
Two up, two down. Yeah,
yeah.
So it's very possible. You know, it's very possible. 75%. Yeah, absolutely. They're on 0 points, 3 points behind. So
arguably not helped by the fact that Cork and Limerick have drawn their game as well, so they both got points in that one. So, what do you think, Murph?
No, yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, the reason the Munster Championship, for example, is so competitive is because there's that sweet spot of there being no safety net. You know, three go through, two go down. The two down has really benefited the league now at the moment, because pre-season's gone, you now have no semi-finals for the league, and you also have two to go down. That's a lovely sweet spot, really, for teams, because all those teams will want to stay in 1A next year because they want those competitive games to blood, lads. Like, it could actually be a really good sweet spot now for the league to be in. It's not the end of the world for Clare if they do go down. They're one of the teams that can absorb that because they're being All-Ireland champions. Like, you know, if Brian Lowen felt it was so important that they were to stay up in 1A, he would be calling Shane O'Donnell back. He would be playing David Fitzgerald. He would be doing all that. So they can absorb that at the moment. But nevertheless, with what he has, I still think he does want to stay up in 1A, and they will want to stay up there. But, you know, after with these games played and no points on the board, you just have to say that, yeah, it is looking like it. If there was one team going down, you'll say, I know, they'll get it on track. They'll beat Wexford and, you know, get another result and off they go. But with the two teams down now, you're going, yeah, this is sure. It's obviously a very tough position for them. But as we've said, in fairness, the games have changed a lot, you know, over the three rounds of it so far. You know, a lot has happened. So we'll see how the results go over the next few weeks. But I'd agree with Skehill. I think 75% is a fair call for them to go down, yeah.
All right. It's going to have to get a result against Cork or Limerick, realistically, on top of that Wexford game. So the other match was the one that Murph was very much on point watching for us, which was his own county, Kilkenny, up against Wexford. Kilkenny roared into a big lead in this game. They found themselves 12 points up. They'd won 9 on the board in no time, really. Went on to win by 217 to 15 points in the end. Keith Roster was saying afterwards that he was happy with how they played in the second half, but the first 38 minutes, he said, and that was before they got their point from play, said it wasn't what they're about as a team. He says he wasn't happy at all. They addressed it at halftime, showed a good bit of fight in the second half, but we can't get away from the fact that we played very poorly in the first 38 minutes of the game. So obviously they prop up the table at the moment on scoring difference behind Clare as things stand. Before we talk about the game itself, you can give us the proper insight into this, Murph, because Jackie absolutely dodged this on the TV. He was talking about the fact they showed TJ warming up, right?
Yeah.
Apparently TJ said he's doing better metrics than he ever has before. So I'm assuming TJ is telling everyone what these metrics metrics are, what he's doing. What's TJ doing that we're going to see a better version of TJ than ever before now?
I don't know. I didn't know he was doing anything different. No, genuinely, he hasn't been saying, like, anytime you ask TJ, he's in the best shape he's ever been in his life. So it's not a case that he ever said.
I felt like Jackie talked himself into a bit of a mess on the TV. It was almost like he kind of expected, this is just going to be brushed over. I'm not going to say anything. And then Joanne just turned around and went, well, what's he doing specifically then?
Yeah. No, in fairness, like I've had a few days with TJ over the winter there, on and off, just having a few points and things. But like, if you ask TJ in the height of summer, if you ask TJ in the depths of winter, how is he? He's never been in better shape. So his metrics, I don't know what his metrics are. But he does. He looks after himself savage well. And see, the thing is, at one point I will agree with Jackie, what he said is that, like, if Derek Ling said to TJ, you know, oh, you're playing this match, TJ goes, yeah, that's fine, I'll go out and play this match and play away. Like, it is really down to Derek to kind of, you know, you're kind of holding back the racehorse there by saying, like, look, we want to manage you here. And I don't think it does TJ any good realistically playing these games at the moment. Like, you know, timing his run and getting him in. There's a lot of hurling coming with the round robin. I think we'll probably see him, you know, maybe the next game, like maybe one game before the league ends. I don't think we'll even see him for two games. But I think Jackie just talked himself into a bit of a knot there, saying his metrics are true to whatever metrics he's using to measure. I'm sure, no doubt, they're legit. But I don't know what he's referring to. Is he doing a beep test better than he's ever did? Is he benching more than he's ever did? I don't know. But I've no doubt that TJ is in flying form. Yeah.
Talks about the Kilkenny performance then, because look, I suppose the seam goes out of it a little bit in the second half during the game as Wexford come back, and, you know, credit to them, because I was very, very worried at half time. I thought Kilkenny could maybe open up really on them, and Wexford dug in a little bit. But overall, was this a pleasing Kilkenny performance after what you saw last week?
Well, not really. Like, it was, the first half was really good. Their tackling was really good, and that was the first thing I'd be saying about them. Like, there was lads tracking back all over the place. There was a few examples of good flicks, like where there were just Wexford player going through, flick the ball off, Kilkenny player picks it up, and they move it really well up the field. They were creating huge amounts of space, getting really good scores. The one thing that Kilkenny won't be happy with is they took their foot off the gas. Now, Wexford came into it as well. Like, it's not the old cliche of a game of two halves, but it really was. For anyone watching it, Wexford were really bad in the first half. I mean, they just didn't lay a glove on Kilkenny. And to counter that, Kilkenny were really good. They were moving the ball really well. You know, Massey Keown gets his goal. He got two goals. They were getting really good scores in terms of points all over the field. They were just working really well. I'd say, Derek, what he won't be happy with is it feels like they went in at half time and kind of rested on their laurels a small bit. Whereas at the same time, down in the other dressing room, Keith Roster was probably giving the Wexford lads a small bit of a dressing down, because, you know, you can put out all the game plans you want. And okay, Wexford, Rory O'Connor goes off with an injury. They had one or two injuries around the field. They had to use a few subs very early on. But nevertheless, they just weren't laying a glove on Kilkenny. And it's a very small factor of the game. But like I said, first point for play after 38 minutes, 40 minutes, there was no wind in it. So like, that's like, all those things are bad metrics to be looking at. So Kilkenny will be happy with the first 35 minutes. But what Derek Ling will look at, and what I'd compare it to, is last year, like Richie Hogan referenced it on Off the Ball one of the times, about the first round of the Munster Championship where Clare and Limerick played, and Clare were leading up to the 60th minute, and then suddenly Limerick come roaring back into the game and win the game. And what Richie pointed out was that Limerick can't keep doing that, because eventually someone might catch them. Oh no, okay, Cork bet them on their merit in the All-Ireland semi-final. But that, I think that point rings true for Kilkenny against Wexford, is that performed really well, had Wexford beaten essentially at half time, and let Wexford come back into it. Like, that's the part that Derek Ling will be going, lads, why did we do that? Like, if we go and we get a good start against Galway in the round robin or in the Leinster Championship, you know, if we don't sort these things now, that's something we're going to carry into a Leinster Championship, and that's something that could catch us. So if you look at Kilkenny over the course of the three games, Derek Ling will be looking at it going, started slowly against Clare, grew into it, and really happy that it grew into it. That was good. Started slowly against Galway, and Galway just, you know, stayed going, had too much for them. Really good first half against Wexford, but then a poor second half. So Derek will be pointing at these things, going, lads, show me the 60, 70 minutes of hurling that you've actually done so far. So that's something that I wouldn't be overly happy with. I think, like I said, great 35 minutes in the first half. But it's the thing of going out and performing that in the second half. I feel bad for Keith Roster as well, because it's a tough position he's in with the lots of injuries. You know, we saw Jack O'Connor on the bench. We saw Lee Chin is obviously on the way back. Rory O'Connor goes off with an injury. Like, there's just, you know, it's a tough place for them to be in at the moment. Liam Ryan is still out at the moment. It's very tough, but I think the one thing he'll take away from the other night, if he is to take anything from it, he'll go, lads, look at the first 35 minutes. We were terrible. You know, that's not what we're about. Look at the second 35, what we achieved. We won the second half against and like that's something they do have to point at. So I think where Keith Rosser focuses on now going facing Clare is that he'll just be point blank saying to lads, yeah, well, lads, we have injuries, we have this, we have that. But it's all worth nothing if we perform like we did in the first half against Kilkenny. However, if we go out and we just throw the kitchen sink at the opposition and it's going to be Clare the next day, well, who knows? But at least we're in with a shout. So, and he gave a fairly dejected interview afterwards as well. You know, obviously he was saying that there's a lot more negatives at the moment. And it's a tough position because you don't see Wexford in that position. You don't see Keith Rosser in that position. But, you know, they do have a few tough weeks ahead of them. And I think the quicker they get back, like the likes of Lee Chin, just to be a little bit of an anchor there and a little bit of a, I suppose, to bolster confidence. If they could get Liam Ryan back, that'd be mighty as well. And we'll see about Rory O'Connor. Not really sure about the injury. I think could have been a bit of a hamstring or something like that. So there's concern there at the moment. But
it's
again,
no more, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is.
Like you're not going to a senior intercounty game. I said they're averaging 15.3 points a game. It's a
yeah, you know, no. Yeah, it's not
and
good.
50% of those are frees, and 10% of those are from your keeper.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like you cannot be going through an intercounty game as senior playing 15 points. That won't win you in a 16 game.
Yeah, yeah.
So defending is one thing, right? Don't get me wrong. Defending is important. Of course it is. But like, yeah. They conceded 217 against Kilkenny last night, which is average enough. Like, not too bad. It's not awful.
No,
like,
no, yeah.
It's 23 points, but when you only score 15, like, that's horrendous. So defense-wise, not terrible, but scoring-wise, big problems.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
They need Lee Chin, Rory Connor.
They need people. Like, so like, I know if Lee Chin's in the stand, great. Put your boots on, son. It's time to come out. Like, you have to come out. Yeah. It's time to get out. Like, you know, that's where reality is doing it. Because if you ask me the same question about Wexford, you ask me about Clare, it's 100% Wexford are going down. And that mightn't be an awful thing for them.
No, it might be.
While they're going through the process. Like, don't get me wrong. They have to go through the championship before they get to next year's league. But the championship will come and go. Of course they will. But dealing with retirements, dealing with injuries, dealing with heads away is a tough proposition when these games come thick and fast, really thick and fast, you know, against the top six teams of the country.
Yeah.
So in Leinster, you might have somewhat of a semi-breather, somewhat, right? Mm. But in the league at the moment, you've got none. It's just, it's dog eat dog, and unfortunately, they're getting eaten alive.
Yeah. You heard it here, Lee. No more WhatsApp into Australian WhatsApp
group. On the road, son.
Back in the pitch, son. Crack wing back made a very fair point on the YouTube last week, and I appreciate it was before the Kilkenny game, but I think this is still very relevant. He said, as a Wexford supporter, I'm unsure at the moment about how to feel. On the one hand, there's definitely players who can fill the holes which are being left by our recent retirements. Conal Flood could definitely replace Liam Ogg at wing forward. Conor Foley looks like he could move in at wing back in O'Hanlon's place, and once Liam Ryan is back, Dee O'Keefe didn't really play a lot last year due to injury. On the other hand, Wexford almost beat Clare in 2022. I think if Rory didn't get injured, they would have won. But then next year, we nearly got relegated. I don't think it's a stretch to say we could end up in a similar situation again, which is a fair point. And we said that last year. It's very difficult to know. Wexford's high can be quite high, and then Wexford maybe don't have that consistency. And because you're trying to recycle a team and losing that much experience from the panel, even if I appreciate that Dee O'Keefe and a few others were injured last year, when you lose them in one glut, it becomes difficult. Yeah. And look, Leinster might be tricky this year.
Can I ask you a question?
In a minute. Go on.
I have a question for both of you. They're both staunch Leinstermen, right?
Yeah.
So, if the truth, like if you're looking at, I'm only blowing, sure, the lead says.
Staunch Leinstermen.
But like you look at Kilkenny and Galway, for example, you're off now at the minute, right? The youth is propping up the team, and we'll continue to prop it up because there's like a conveyor belt in each way, you know? I have major concerns over Wexford in the future. Not talking about now. Obviously, now is a minor concern. But the next 2 or 3 years, where are they going to be? Are they going to be passed out by Dublin? Probably, definitely, at the moment. You'd have to say, wouldn't you? We'll awfully pass them out. Very, very likely. Because they just the conveyor belt of young lads coming through to Wexford doesn't seem to be there at the minute. You know what I mean? So for them to challenge against Kilkenny, Galway, Dublin, Offaly, even Leinster alone, that's going to be extremely tough. So not to be too down, but it is kind of worrying, isn't it?
A little bit, but would you not say that probably the very good, what was the all 21 grades team that they had, that would ultimately become the spine of their 2019 team, that they actually got the most from that group? That you'd be hoping they could do something again, where their 20s team was very good last year, the one that got to the Leinster final, and some of these lads are already getting game time, that Wexford have got a track record of bringing these lads through, that maybe they can get the most out of them. I presume that's going to be absolutely crucial, though.
It will be. Like it absolutely will be. Like if you consider that like the team that Dee O'Keefe and those lads came through on, like I'd agree with both points. Like what Skehill is saying there is probably there's not a team like that on the radar. I think that's probably what you're saying, Skehill. You know, and that's you know, as good as that team was, it was a Leinster Championship. Was, you know, they could have got to the All-Ireland final, let's say, in 2019, and I'd feel that that's what probably that team will feel was the one they left behind. And not taken away from Tipperary's performance in that semi-final, but they would have felt that there was at least getting to an All-Ireland final in that team. But that was a team that was quite visibly had a lot of ability in it. I think what Skehill is also saying is that where is that team in Wexford at the moment? There is.
Just haven't seen it.
Yeah, like, I mean, the likes of Oisín Pepper and these lads would have been marked out as, you know, great individual lads. But you do need kind of gluts of even five and six lads coming through, and, you know, two or three of them will make a team. And, you know, but just lads who are at least pointed in the right direction. So I think there's merit in both points, but I understand where Skettle's coming from there, in that there's probably going to be a little bit of regress before there's a forward step taken, considering they were Leinster champions in 2019. They were competing really hard. They were a thorn in the side of a lot of counties for a long time. There's going to be a little bit of a step back, it looks like, before there'll be a step forward.
Yeah, I think you should watch, obviously, the Leinster under 20 group this year. They're in a group with Dominic Kinney.
Yeah.
Okay. That'll tell a bit now, too. You know, and obviously, if they finish bottom of that group, I'm just saying theoretically, the championship still isn't over. They'll play a tier two team. But those two teams who were the closest rivals, Dominic Kinney, that'll tell a lot as to where Wexford are at this current age crop, which is extremely important crop in your under-20s, obviously. Mm-hmm. I'm highlighting a concern. Obviously, I presume there's people in Wexford, you know, in obviously much closer circles than I am, that probably have similar concerns.
Yeah.
And if you've no concerns, then I think your head is in the clouds to touch. You know, I think, yeah.
No, I'd appreciate that. I suppose the point I was trying to make is they have a history of being able to bring players through, and that is going to be required, and maybe even more so than before with the situation we're in at the moment. So they prop up the table. You're both trying to butter me up about Offaly earlier on, talking about how well Offaly had hurled against Antrim this afternoon. It's funny, I don't know whether it is me being a glass half empty kind of guy, but Antrim are awful.
They were shocking.
Really, really bad.
As much
as I enjoyed the way that Offaly played and Offaly ran through them for fun and put pressure on their puck out and did a lot of the things that you would have hoped for and actually broke through tackles and physically were very good. And I'm sure when you look at the stats, that's all really good stuff. And they put up a huge score and it's very pleasing to do it on national TV while people are watching it. But you can't help but think, what the hell were Antrim doing for most of that game? They were getting turned over on counter-attacks all the time. It seemed that they kept on getting caught with Dan Ravenhill and Brian Dighton going in behind them. Didn't learn from the first one where Dighton probably should have squared it to Charlie Mitchell for a goal early on. Then Ravenhill gets in behind in a very similar manner, which was just direct. Offaly went around their sweeper in the first half. Antrim then, when they had the wind, I don't know what they were doing. They were still doing short puck outs and losing it. I don't know. I was a little bit aghast with the way they hurled, because I was talking to a few people that were at the Westmeath game last week in Corrigan Park and said that Antrim actually looked pretty good. I don't know what the real Antrim are right now. I'll bring you Davey's quotes in a moment, but I'll throw it to you first, Scale, on this one. Like, how bad were Antrim today?
It goes by what Murph was saying a few minutes ago. If you have a bad day, right, just strip it back to the basics. Work really hard. Pull back your team. Defend really well. What you score is what you score, but what you concede, you can tell more about your team. Do you know what I mean? If you keep letting the clock go and the scoreboard go up and up and up, you're just letting things fly by you. So when I watched today's game, I was looking at Antrim thinking, like, these lads, when they play up the north, right, in their home pitch at Corrigan Park, they're filled with passion, energy from the crowd, very hard to break them down. They're running all over the place with huge energy, right, because they're confident. The minute they go away, which we've analysed this before, and it comes up with the quotes too, Willie, you know, when they go away to an away ground, it's like they don't have the same, I suppose, mental strength. That's and it was a question I asked, I think, you, Morph, last year, as to why that is, you know what I mean? So they obviously, they're extremely tribal, extremely proud hurling county. So when they go up and play at home, it's like they're carrying the county on their back. Like, even carrying the GA, they're, you know, it's like they're livelihood, the recognition, etc. But today they look so despondent. Like, they look tired. Their structure was all over the place. I couldn't make out what they're trying to do, particularly in the second half. You know, I couldn't figure out what was the... Normally, you put yourself in the mind space of the team there or the manager, right? What am I trying to get them to achieve? I couldn't understand it. Was it a possession game? Was it a running game? Was it a seven-man defence? Was it a 10-man behind midfield? Nothing. There was nothing there to say that they were trying to play a particular type of game plan. And Offaly, just in fairness, Will, they just played what was in front of them. And unfortunately for Antrim, they just carved them up. Like, the full forward lane was provided too much space. Dighton was given far too much space. you know, there should have been like a sitting back six there to cut off the half back line completely. Samson was excellent. Ravenhill was good. You know, Dygan was really good. His hands, like, for a big man, like, was really impressive. He seems to have gotten really better even in the last, I would say, 18 months. Do you know what I mean? So, and you're still missing players, like. You know, so it's not as if you have got a full complement at the moment. Keeper Cry was good. Positives. But again, what we say about games in the league at the minute, yeah, don't get too high when you're winning. Don't get too low when you lose. So right now, I think you did enough, obviously, to beat a poor Antrim team. But the results might change next week. So, happy, got the 2 points, move on. But Antrim have work to do.
Oh, yeah. I'll ask you about Antrim in a second, Murph. But like, from Offaly's perspective, it comes to the players that are missing as well. So they have 5 points from six so far. Brian Dygan said after the game, they were targeting the first three. Two of them were at home, Laois away. There were games they expected to get points from. Probably feel maybe they left one behind against Carlow the first day. So they could have had six. And now they have to go to Croke Park next after the break to play Dublin. They will have Westmeath after that at home, which they expect to win, and they go away to Waterford in the last round. And now, as it works out, Waterford are going to have to go hammer and thongs to try and qualify. So it's not going to be a case of Waterford easing up in the last game, which is the way some of them might have hoped. But yeah, the players who are missing still, Owen Cahill hasn't poked the ball. Keelan Kiley was part of the squad today but didn't come on. Ben Keneally's missing, is going to be out for a while. And Adam Street is going to miss the vast rate of the league. So they're missing probably four or five starters there. But again, it's one of those things, you know, you talk about players being found and whatever else. There's a half forward line there. I didn't think there was Shane Kelly. I thought he was better closer to goal. Seems to have now found his position within the half forward line. He wins ball. Dan Burke is very good at winning ball within that half forward line as well. Slowly but surely, it's going to be difficult for Cahill to get back in. Screeny's going to have a job to try and displace Dan Ravenhill in the corner when he comes back to full fitness. So
come
that's
on.
Exactly what you want, you know.
Just stop.
Yeah.
Screeny's going to have a job to take out.
Ravenhill's been playing well. Took his goal very well today, and I would have thought that Mitchell and Dignan are nailed on starters in the other two positions in the full forward line. So,
well, no, it's a great spread of players to have competing. Like, you know, whatever the final six are going to look like, there's great options, great variety in the players there as well. If you're talking like, you know, Charlie Mitchell and Burke and a few of them, like, they all provide something different. Like, Dignan's a huge man there as well, and we saw how effective he was there. If you have Ravenhill breaking off from Screeny, whatever. Like, there's great, it's not that they're very one-dimensional in what they have. They have lots of options there. And I'd be certainly very, like you were saying, glass half empty. Scale said it there. You can only play what's in front of you today. But there was huge indicators there where, like, it was 10 points to 7, I think it was, when Dan Ravenhill got his first goal. And it was simply a case of the ball spilled. I can't even remember which Offaly player just struck it in, but just struck a long ball. But if you actually look at the goal, there's only, I think, three players inside the 65, like Dan Ravenhill and I think two Antrim defenders. Paddy Burke might have been one of them. So, like, I know Davey is talking about the work rate of Antrim, but their structure, it was very high from whatever they were doing. Now, if you look at the Antrim puck out as well, Offaly were stepping off them because I think they kind of knew, well, we can win the ball out here and we know what we're about going forward. Whereas Antrim didn't know what they were about. Like, whatever game plan they're probably trying to implement, the players don't really know what they're doing yet by the looks of it, but that's also not matched by any sort of work rate as well. And it goes back to the earlier point we're saying is that you can do nothing anyway if you're not even working hard. But the one thing I was really impressed about by Offaly was they were snapping the ball around really well. Like, you know, getting the ball head up, they were, you know, popping the ball, moving it out of trouble, moving it into scoring positions. And they had an enormous amount of space that allowed them and it facilitated them playing that type of hurling. But Dignan, for example, like after Ravenhill got the goal and they put it up to maybe 6 or 7 points, Dignan was going through, he had a bit of an overlap, but he just kept the scoreboard moving. He just popped it over the bar, turned around, reset. And I liked how clear Offaly appeared to be thinking. They were just like, take the score, reset, turn the ball over, win a free, pop it over the bar, whatever it is. So from that point of view, like, Will, I'd be just going, that's a fucking great position for Offaly to be in. That, you know,
look, there's a few lads as well who were playing with DCU during the week in the fits, and a few lads were involved with UL. So again, it was a bit of a kind of a mix and match with the starting 15 that were playing there. I still kind of worry a little bit about Offaly's depth, but maybe, again, as these players start to come back in, I saw Keelan Kiley togging as part of the 26. Obviously, he's getting a little bit closer to a return, and he's going to be Offaly's natural starting six, which means Donald Shirley can go into wing back. Jason Sampson can maybe play in the other wing. Killian Sampson, as Scale mentioned, was really good today and took particularly the point he hit from the stand side where he flicked it off on his weaker side and put it over the bar. It's a lot to like, but a lot of space was afforded by Antrim during the game, which is the one caveat when it comes to this. I have Davey's quotes in front of me here, which I'm sure you're all going to love. Because again, it sounds like Davey is playing down a team that he's taken over. So, quote, Yeah, I'm scratching my head here big time. It isn't easy. I feel sorry for the boys because they put in an awful effort. But when you're good in Corrigan, they're good. But we have to address away from Corrigan, which Murph already brought up there. Then he said it was polar opposites the way they played against Westmeath. He said, quote, awfully hammered us in the tackles today. We got to figure that out. There's no point. They can bring in all the Davy Fitzes or whoever. I do love the third person reference. They can bring in all the Davy Fitzes or whoever else is there. It doesn't matter until we make sure that we're consistent over a period of time.
That's not to be cynical here, that's a kind of WWE move really there, isn't it? Referring to yourself in the third person, or even an NFL move, you know, the way some of the wide receivers or something might be talking about themselves in third person. But no, when you sent that in, I actually didn't, I had to take a double take to see, was it him mentioning himself in the third person? But okay.
Are you surprised, Ross?
No comment. Anyhow.
You're very clean, man, aren't you?
I don't know. Like, isn't I'm not going. Like last year, I would have said, looked at. I didn't like. Let's say with Waterford, I didn't like. Let's say comments towards what happened during Liam Cal's time. Like, you know, in terms of saying that, oh, they're tired or whatever it's going to be. You know, and playing down that you're taking over a team, and you know they're in a bad place or whatever like this. Like Darren Leeson has done a great job. He did a great job at Antrim over the last few years. They've lost players. You know, Neil McManus is gone. You know, they've lost lads, and it of course is tough. But you took on the job. You know, take it on. Don't play them down. You know, it's okay.
That's my point.
Which is it?
My point is that you took on the job, right? You committed to getting these lads better.
Yeah.
Whatever the issues are, deal with it internally.
Yeah.
Deal with it internally and say, look, we took our baiting. We'll move on. Go. Don't be going on about it's okay for us to talk about the podcast. We're neutrals. Mm. We're paid to talk about this stuff, if you like, right?
But yeah.
For him, he's paid to get them guys better, not them.
Mm.
Knock them internally. Do what you have to do internally. But externally to the public and to the media, keep your mouth shut, say nothing, and a closed mouth catch no flies. You know what I mean? So that's my issue with it.
Yeah. And like that's it. I just don't want it to turn into a thing of where it's knocking Antrim players or the Antrim team, you know, needlessly. Like, you know, they didn't perform well today. You could just take this on the chin and say, look, it's a once-off performance. And again, not to say if they point towards Galway against Tipperary or anything like that, or even Clare against Galway yesterday. Like, you can just take this as a performance and say, look, it's not where we wanted to be and so on. But you don't have to turn it into a big thing where you're like, and even distancing yourself from it. Like Keith Rosser, for example, with the Wexford performance, he was disappointed and he said, look, we're in a bad position. And it's okay, grand, fine. But he owned it, you know. Oh, so that's why I'm kind of saying no comment for the moment. Let it off. I think there's a few weeks to go. And the one thing I will say is they haven't been good away from home. Like, is it 2022 since they've had the last victory away from Corrigan Park? I'd agree with him on that point. You know, they've found it tough on the road. But look, look, you've taken on the job, just own it and see where it goes. But look, we'll see what the next few weeks has, see how they perform. Do you know,
Waterford in 2 weeks' time in Corrigan Park, so it's I don't know whether it's the perfect game to try and bounce back from, but Waterford certainly bounced back today. Again, it's a game I was hosting on the radio and we were covering this game as well. It's kind of weird. Like, Waterford didn't really pull away from Laois until late enough in the game. They hit a few late scores, won by 10 points in the end. But there's a few plus points there for Waterford. Again, some of their injured players are starting to come back in. Desi Hutchinson got the best part of 10 minutes into his legs, including injury time by the end of it. So that's a good thing from their perspective. They got a goal very early on in the game, which Ender Rowland won't be overly happy about. I'm sure people are probably going to see it on League Sunday. It's very unlike him. It was a free that had dropped short, and he went to try and pick the ball up, and it was flicked into the net by Patrick Fitzgerald. Pádraic Fitzgerald also was very good. He got 13 points from dead balls across the game. Jamie Barron added 4 points, kind of operating around the half-forward line, and Shane Bennett took over a couple of points as well. Like, it's a good win for Waterford. I was listening to Peter Queeley after the game, Skell, and he was saying that the players were quite hurt by what had happened against Carlo last week.
Yeah.
He said it was a far from perfect performance today, given that it took them so long to get away from Laois. But maybe the most important thing for them before they go back to a little block of training before the Antrim game now will be just to have 2 points on the board here.
Well, the most important thing after a defeat that some in Waterford were classed as demoralising, that's just the truth. Mm. They'd be very disappointed with the manner in which they went down, is just get the train back on the tracks. So regardless of performance today, come away with a victory. And they've done that. Look, and it's the type of game like where Waterford, you expect them to come out absolutely gunning, you know. And if they win by 20 points, that's accepted. You know, it was always expected. But if you win by 6, oh, Waterford aren't going great. So they found a median ground. They did what they had to do. You know what I mean? There's still players there that are relatively new to the whole setup in general. They're missing a heap of players. they're surviving, getting through it. So this, we'll tell more about Waterford in the next few weeks. You know, it's what are they going to produce against Dublin? What are they produce against Offaly? And I won't hold any reservations until I see, let's say, a continued, how would you say, level performance from Waterford. I'm not beating a panic drum. I was beating a panic drum slightly for Wexford, and I think it was warranted, to be fair, but I won't do it for Waterford just yet, because the players I know they have to come back are of supreme quality, and there's a lot of them. So it's not as if we're talking about one or two. We're talking eight or nine to come back here. And so when you get eight or nine players of their quality to come in, you've got a right setup again. So I think, look, the players, yes, they're hurt. I can see it. I can probably feel it in their the last couple of weeks, but they did what they had to do. Come away at two points and move on. Leash, on the other hand, they're in a bit of a pickle too, tricky position.
I think they are. It was almost called their All-Ireland final when it comes to next week.
It was just technical. Did you, watching the match, right?
Yeah.
It just goes to separate. So you can be as fit as you like, you can be as strong as you like, you can be as motivated, etc. It was just the basics. The brilliant basics is why I'm looking at separating these teams. Like Limerick looked slick today. Galway looked slick last night, even with the pitch. My God.
Yeah.
But Leash, the basic catches, touchwork, pickups. Like how many pickups they missed today that allowed Waterman to get back in again? Like, I mean, touchwork. Like, I couldn't believe how many opportunities they gave Waterford. Unforced turnovers that get possession back to the opposition. That's a killer, like. You know, and I know the pitches, you can say what you want about pitches, but it's the same for everyone. Like, we're all dealing with the same thing. It's just that little bit of basic quality that separates these teams. Like, it's not major tactics today. It wasn't major fitness or major strength. It was just that basic quality. It's a killer, do you know?
Yeah, no, it really is. Huge game for Leash. So, like, it didn't help Leash that 2 weeks ago they were due to play Westmeath. They're on the bus. They're on the way to Mullingar. They get the call to say the game is off and the pitch was unplayable on that Saturday. So, what was going to be the break week for Leash is now out the window because they missed the first round. So, they have to play against Westmeath. I think whoever loses that game, the loser of that is going to be really behind the eight ball when it comes to relegation. I know that the group is a little bit wide open, but if you lose that game, you're behind the opposition on head-to-head who are going to be the other team going for relegation. So
yeah,
you're in big trouble. So Leash, again, kind of 12 of the 20 points came from dead balls. And some players showed up well. I actually thought Paddy Purcell played quite well during the game, and they've been lucky to keep him around at a time when they don't have Picky Maher this year. They don't have Roddy King this year. They've lost quite a bit of experience, not too dissimilar to when we were talking about Wexford's situation. Dublin kind of made hard enough work of Westmeath in the end, albeit they had to hurl for over 20 minutes a man short after Conor Loughran was sent off. But Dublin won in the end, 122 to 16 points. They were maybe a little bit rusty after the break last week. It started brilliantly against Antrim in the first game at Croke Park. They're back to Croke Park now for the next round. It was Loughran who'd scored the goal for them in the first half. Dermot O'Dooling scored 9 points, seven of them frees. But it's kind of a game that stayed in 4 and 5 points for the best part in Dublin's favour. Westmeath never managed to get ahead of them. The good news for Westmeath were some of the players that have come back in. So Davy Glennon got the first minutes into his legs, Scales old teammate. He played for 9 minutes. Niall O'Brien came on late in the game. There was certainly plenty of speculation in Westmeath that he might not be available at all this season, so he came on and played a bit. David Williams scored 10 frees during the game, but again, it was just one of those for Westmeath. Couldn't get themselves ahead during the game at all. And they also had a very bizarre situation where Adam Ennis, who was one of the players that came on, got booked because he came on too early before he was told he was off, and then he fouled someone while he was on as a blood sub and was perhaps lucky not to get a red card for what would have been a second yellow at that point. Would have been one of the more unusual sendings off if you get sent off for coming on the pitch too early and then get sent off while you're on as a blood sub as well, but he avoided the red card. So that's kind of where those teams are at. Like, I suppose for Dublin, Murph, at this stage, it's still a golden opportunity for them to get promoted. Like, if they win this game against Offaly, they're really well set. I know they still have to play Waterford, but if they get a win in Croke Park on Saturday week, you're talking about Niall O'Callaghan's side being the big favourites for promotion here.
Yep, it'll suit them down to the ground as well, because if they, like, the round robin and Leinster Championship and the All-Ireland Series, if they go for it, We'll tell a lot about Dublin this year. And like, indications are is that they're going to be in a really good position to make a stab at a Leinster Championship this year, which is great for Dublin. It's great to have them potentially back competing really well, albeit they were at the Leinster final last year, but weren't, I suppose, competing really with Kilkenny that day. But with the Nafina lads coming back, there seems to be a new kind of life in the Dublin charge at the moment. getting promoted and going into 1A and putting that aside and then going into a Leinster Championship will be great for them. And let's say whatever comes out of Leinster, whatever comes out of, let's say, if they go into the qualifiers or, you know, whatever comes for them, facing back into a 1A next year will be great for them. Because, you know, if Niall O'Callaghan is going for a few years here, again, we'll call it 3 years or 4 years, you know, he will take, with the position he's in at the moment, he'll take more from being in a 1A and competing as hard as he can with those teams, because they can go and do that. Unlike, let's say, Westmeath probably just aren't at that position where they can actually go. And if they went into 1A, it probably wouldn't do them as much of a service as Dublin would at the moment. So I think that's where they are at the moment. So yeah, go get a win in their next match. That's nearly them as good as promoted, or be close enough, would it be?
It will, because they'll be a point ahead of Offaly with a game in hand, won't they, Will?
Yeah. Well, sure, there you are, yeah.
They do have Waterford and Carlow, obviously, in their last couple of games, so it's kind of stacked on that side of it a little bit.
Yeah, but they know what they have to do now, like, you know. Yeah, they'll have done their business. And I think there'll be a quiet confidence in that they just went out the door. Like, I mean, they can look and say, well, Waterford went and lost to Carlow, and whatever else happens with Waterford in the rest of the league now, Dublin, if they come through with a clean bill of health in terms of all their fixtures, they'll be able to point to that and say, look at lads, you know, whatever was put in front of us so far in the league, well, why not go out here into a Leinster round robin and perform against some of the teams you've played already against in the league? But then, you know, we're now going to face our Kilkennys and we're going to face our Galways and all that. And it's a nice balance. And then, like I said, once this year is rounded off, if they go up into 1A, I think they'll really relish that next year. Again, having, I suppose, the likes of AJ Murphy and these lads. Like, they're also introduced a few lads who were on the panel a few years ago at different times. They've brought those lads back in again. So they're like, the lads they are bringing in, there's a mixture there of lads who've been there previously and new lads coming in. So the balance in general looks quite good for Dublin. So I think they'll be hell-bent on, you know, guaranteeing that spot to get promoted. And I think they're in the right time to go up there now at the moment to 1A.
Skell, one last question for you, because this will date wonderfully after we finish this podcast. Who's going to win the Super Bowl? Because, you know, early adopters of the podcast will get this just before the game starts and they can go, oh, look, he's made a prediction. I wonder, is he right? Most people wake up tomorrow and go, oh, he was wrong or he was right. So who's winning?
If it's fair, right, and there's no bullshit calls, okay?
Ah, no, right, go on.
See, the thing is, right, that the Chiefs' run game is, in terms of defending the run game, is brilliant. Hmm. Like, they haven't conceded more than 90 yards in the last, I think it's in playoff football, the last 6 years, which is huge. So the Eagles, Saquon Barkley is obviously MVP territory. And if he doesn't get going, the Eagles don't win. I don't believe in Jalen Hurts' arm, to be honest. I believe in his feet, right, Jack? So if the ground game doesn't go well for the Eagles, Chiefs going to win, definitely. But if the Eagles get going in the ground game, Eagles are going to win.
Okay.
Is that a good answer?
I think the way you've gone, it's a clash of styles. So the Eagles are going to have to shut down Mahomes, simple as that. And on the other side, if the Eagles get running, it's going to be very difficult for the Chiefs to stop the various threats.
Blitz Mahomes, send him up the middle. Don't send him on the edges. Send him up the middle. Here comes the NFL guy. I'm the NFL coach here, Murphy. Yeah.
Well, the good news
blitz him from the edge, send him up the middle and bury him.
The good news is
middle linebacker, bury him.
We can ask Kel a lot more about NFL coming to Dublin on the members pod, which will be coming your way tomorrow morning.
Did you know John Hansberry is playing NFL for Ireland?
I saw that.
I saw a clip of him, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My old
is that an official like Ireland team or who's he playing for?
Yeah.
It's the Irish NFL team, is it?
Tight end.
Yeah, I was going to say he's tight end. I saw him catching the ball for a touchdown and like he was a big towering figure when he was in the end zone.
Oh, jeez, guys. Like, and he fully believes that like if he keeps actually being in the NFL, like...
What is he? 5'11", 6'4"?
Maybe 5'11" at best, yeah.
Yeah. Living the dream. Skell, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck to you.
Ah, see, has it learned from last week?
Yeah.
Paul Murphy, thank you. Yeah.
Thanks very much.
OTB's The Hurling Pod with James Skell and Paul Murphy.